Welcome to the Same Old Mumbles podcast. This is episode one. The audio is not particularly great in this episode, but we clear it up after about a minute or so. So bear with us. This is our first adventure into podcasting. We hope you enjoy the series as we get to grips with what it means to create an unofficial AFC Wimbledon podcast.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them.
Don't want me shirt for the. So this is probably not going to be released. Same Old Wombles, episode one podcast. There you go.
Same Old Wombles, episode one.
Yeah, one. So, I think I should let everyone introduce themselves, though, really, because I think that's more exciting. So, maybe
in the bottom
kind of
right-hand corner of my screen is my brother, Matthew.
Matthew, introduce yourselves.
Oh, okay. Well, the bottom right-hand corner of mine is Mark. This is going to get confusing.
I'm trying to be in charge, so yeah, Matthew, go for it.
I'm Matthew Cooper. Been supporting the Duns since. It could be 81, it could be 82, it's been that long, I can't quite remember. I am quite old. I'm a same old Womble, almost as old as Mark.
Thank you. I can't believe that you can't remember your first ever game. Isn't that the whole point?
I remember my first game. This is it. This is the one thing that I have a problem with on all of these sort of things is I know my first game was against Scunthorpe and we drew 2-2.
All right, I tell you what, for next week, I will dig out the programme from that first game.
The
point is, Mark, is that we started following the Dons before we went to a game.
Okay. Yeah. Well, those of us born and bred in Wimbledon, luckily enough, my first game was December, 10th of December 1977. First ever season.
Yeah, but I've seen the way that you're looking up there, you're looking off the screen, because that's where you've got a big thing that says my first game was.
No.
You're looking there. You're looking for
my programs. That's what I'm looking at.
That's how you do it. You don't know.
I think the challenge then is for Mark to find programs for all the games that we suggest. That would be brilliant.
I'll do it. Not during the podcast, but I'll do it for the next podcast.
Yeah, we can use that as show art.
When were you our mascot?
I was never our mascot. I know you
were. Ah, loser.
So not much of a fan then. I mean,
well, I'm blaming my parents. It's nothing to do with me. I'm not old enough to be able to afford.
Where you? Have your kids been mascots?
My children have all been mascots. No. The eldest was a mascot, and the day they were mascot, we beat.
Hold on. You don't know when your kids were mascots or not?
No. Only the eldest.
It's not hard. It's not hard. Little person running on the pitch. Big moment.
Yeah. Two youngest ones weren't. They're the two that are into it, actually. But the eldest one that's not into football at all was mascot. We beat Altrincham 4-1. Danny Kebble scored a hat-trick. And we won golden goal first prize. Boom.
Wow, that is pretty impressive.
Whereas when me and Niall were mascots against
in 1983,
we lost 2-1.
And then
that was the last game we lost that season. I'm right,
yeah.
Aren't I?
We then went on an unbeaten run of 22 games. So basically, if Wimbledon want to get promoted this season, the best thing to do is get me and Matt as mascots as soon as possible, because that's the obvious thing that happens.
I think people would pay money for that to happen.
You say that, Knight. I think we should try and sort out some sort of campaign to get Mark as a mascot. He's not been one. He's been a fan for since when? What?
Since December 77. So coming up for 45 years.
So basically,
45 years. We could do an anniversary. 10th of December, 2022. Tall Mark as a mascot.
That would be amazing. We should totally do it.
Ask Pietro. Yeah, why not? I'm now going to check what game we have on that day.
so Niall, did you go to a game after Matthew or before?
That's the same time. Same time.
You both went to
so
the
like,
same
time. So, as a percentage of my life, I'm more of a Wimbledon fan than my brother.
Oh,
Yeah, but we have to remember that I had 1.5 years of bliss.
Yeah. Before he was born, you mean? Yeah.
Funny. Well, look, I'll round up with the last bit. My game was 1984 against Portsmouth, but I don't really remember it because I was way too young. So, yeah.
Do we win? We either lost that 3-1.
I probably lost.
Send me the details and I'll get you all the details for next week. Stato Mark.
My brother's
first game. My brother's 25 years younger than me. Long story. And his first game was Wimbledon Portsmouth in about 92. Nigel Quashie scored a 25-yarder. We lost 2-0. And we're sitting in the uncovered end at Fran Park. And with about 2 minutes left, this little voice came up saying, "Mummy," this is my ex-stepmum, "Mummy, do we have to come to the game every week?" Because he had no interest in sport at all. And he never came to a game after that until, well, if you look on the Don's Trust kiosk at was King's Meadow and now obviously at Plough Lane, there are three big photographs. And the top photograph on that one is a bloke standing cheering and a woman next to him with her arms out with the flag. The woman with the arms out the flag was my sister, who came to games with me right back at Plough Lane. And the other one, at his second ever game at Wembley, the absolute glory hunter, was my brother. Same little whinging boy.
Oh, man.
I think it's fine to be a glory hunter, as long as you're a glory hunter at AFC Wimbledon. And that's it, because that helps us win.
We're not the right club to be a glory hunter. Goes with it. If you want to support us. You
know. I think if you're looking to be a glory hunter, I just think, you know,
this season.
This is not
season of glory.
Season of glory. All right, that's a good place to start then. So what do we think? Five games in, or whatever we are. What's our impression of the season so far, Mr. Adam?
Well, I've only seen one game live, and I find it very difficult to watch football when it's not in a stadium. So I can't give too much of a lowdown of the squad. But I thought the game I saw live, I thought was pretty good. Obviously, we lost. Well, we drew 2-2 in the end. But at half-time, as we bumped into each other, I said, well, at least we're not losing. And it seemed to be going in the right direction. It just got worse. But I think it's all right so far. I think it's been pretty good. It's been a bit disappointing because of suddenly losing a lot of goals. But I think you can shore that up quite quickly and it just takes a bit of drilling at the back. You know, my main concern right now is that on the game that I saw in person and a little bit on iFollow, but again, like I find it really tricky to follow football on the screen because the cameraman chooses what he wants me to look at and I don't necessarily want to look at that. But the compression of the midfield to the defence, that was a bit worrying. We seem to be sort of suddenly got a bit more of a better formation, I think, than last season. Obviously, I hated last season's formation. But there's this compression that I was a bit worried about, that all of our midfielders were getting pushed right back rather than using the sort of wing backs to push forward, which was a bit odd. But so I'm optimistic.
I believe.
I love the fact that you know about formations.
I love the fact that you look at it and go,
oh, yeah, we're playing 3-5-2 or 3-4 with a 1-1 or whatever it is. You know what I mean? I've got no idea. I genuinely don't know.
He sits too close to Martin Drake. That's what's happened. Martin Drake has, like, morphed into your brain and you're starting to do it. Look, Adam, me and Matt are childs of the early 80s. Why the way football should be played, as we all fundamentally know,
we have
a load of defenders who kick the ball very far, very far up in the air to a big bloke, and we score.
But then you're not using the four in the middle.
There's this bit in the middle that's pointless. It's a known fact that football pitches need to have grass, and the best way to keep the grass on the football pitch is by making sure the ball is not on the grass. You kick it high in the air, job done. Occasionally you give it to like a tricky bloke who does tricky stuff, but as long as he crosses it into the big bloke, that's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Niall Cooper, the anti-Brian Clough of our days.
We all grew up on anti-Brian Clough. That's what we were. We were the anti-Brian Clough team.
That was my first ever away game. My dad took me to the City Ground for the second leg of the League Cup in October 83, I want to say. Yeah. We'd won the first leg 2-0. Second leg, we drew 1-1. And they were like, it was 2 years after the European champions. And yeah, that was interesting. Age of like 12. But yeah, it was hilarious. Always good away days. So, Mr. Niall, you've seen more than one game, haven't you?
I have seen more than one game, yeah. So I think we are actually playing well. And despite everything I've just said, Sal is just on a different level and was, against Gillingham, utterly unplayable. And I also think that our forward line is beginning to gel and looks good. And I remember turning round in the middle of the Gillingham game, saying to Rob Malin, who also sits near us, that I think our defence is quite sorted. They look really good experienced. I think we just shut up shop and we know how to play professionally. And then obviously we then conceded two goals really late on, and then we got tonked at Mansfield, right? So when I come to being a commentator on how all things football, I might not be the most intelligent person in how to judge things. Just saying. Otherwise, I think we're looking all right. I would probably think we probably need a new goalie, and I want a hard bastard in midfield.
So we'll get onto that as our next point, which we can bring Matt in on, actually. In terms of transfers to come in, we know we haven't got a lot of money. We never have a lot of money with Wimbledon, you know. There are 9 days or 8 days and about 4 hours to the transfer window closes.
When this goes out to all, Mark, it'll be completely different. It could be like we've already bought in Messi and, whatever.
And that Mbappe bloke, yeah.
Ronaldo wants that, doesn't he?
As we currently speak, there is almost 8 and a bit days left to go. So what positions would you want to bring in?
I mean, this is a weird thing. I mean, because like, I see stuff through... I mean, I've got no idea. There was a rumour about this Portsmouth guy, wasn't there? And now that's been quashed. I have no idea about him. I don't know if he'd be a good thing or a bad thing. I mean, I think it feels like we need another centre mid. We need someone to cover Marsh. That's what it feels like to me. I think it's dodgy talking about Nick because he sometimes does all right. Do you give the guy a chance? And you know who else do we think we're going to gain that would be as good as him? That we can afford, or better than him that we can afford. So I think, sometimes he's a confidence keeper. If he gets his confidence up, he'll be, hopefully he'll be all right. My thing at the moment I'm curious about is how Asal fits into the squad. Because one would argue he's our star player, as you've always said. But in this current formation, which I can't quite understand, that he's playing a front two, which is NYC and Davison. And then behind, he's now put Chislett in. And so where does Asal fit into our squad? I mean, because in theory, you should be building a side around him. He's a great player. But where does he fit in?
Good question. For no particular reason, I actually saw two preseason games. So I saw Asal play up front, and then I saw him play in midfield. That's what he tried to do in pre-season. And obviously we played Ipswich and we played Reading and they're better teams than us. And, when he played in midfield against Reading, they had Jeff.
Warlock. Just call him Jeff.
Jeff with long hair. Anyway.
Jeff Goldblum!
No, not Jeff Goldblum.
I would reckon he wouldn't be very good. But he's tall.
He's an ex-Premier League player they had playing in midfield. And basically, Asal didn't get a kick. And I thought, well, this isn't going to be great if then you realise he's playing against better opposition. Jeff Thomas. No.
He doesn't have long hair, particularly.
Jeff Hendrick had got there eventually. I would say, in terms of who we brought in, well, obviously, Curry hadn't played before this season. He's been an absolute revelation. Not just in terms of scoring goals, but he just looks like he's comfortable in there. Brown looks like he's comfortable playing centre-back because he hasn't got a huge amount of pace. I don't get the impression, to be honest, that success in League Two is going to be achieved by keeping clean sheet after clean sheet and doing the old 1-0 for the Arsenal. If you win 3-2, 4-2, whatever, you still win 3 points. So, yes, of course we want to keep clean sheets. And if you keep clean sheet, you're doing absolutely fine. But what I wonder is, instinctively, looking at Jackson when he played against us as Charlton manager, he seems to like playing 3-5-2 full stop, which is fine, except then if you've got three players in midfield, who are those three players? Do you have two double hard bastards and then Nisal can do whatever? Or do you have one creative box-to-box midfield player? We all grew up on someone like Robbie Earl. We haven't had a Robbie Earl since then. We all love Robbie Earl, but we haven't had one. I thought McCormick could be some type of lower league Robbie Earl, but what did I know?
Danny Bullman was close.
Danny Bullman was close at the end of the playoff final, but yeah, I'd never seen him run that much.
Jake Reeves.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm talking about, arriving late in the box to, you know, to plant a header in the corner, plus the flailing Bruce Grobbelaar in front of the cop, you know, circa 1992. But
I always think of the one against the Palace.
Yeah, the Palace, or even the Man U one, which I think is on the wall at Plough Lane somewhere.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. Magoma is different gravy, absolute different gravy. But what I'd like is someone that will just sit and kick people so that you don't allow a midfield to just run riot against you. And that would free up Magoma to be able to play creative midfield further forward. And then he can feed the ball into Asal and into Davison and let NYC run. So that's what I would do. I'd want someone else in midfield. Now, supposedly, maybe we're all reading the same websites, but Charlton obviously have recruited an ex-Swindon manager who's recruited some ex-Swindon players. And there are certain players who are not in favour at Charlton who Jackson will know very well. One of them is this Forster Caskey guy. I have no idea what type of midfield player he is, but he's a central midfield player. So he's not even on the bench for them. He's fit, but like McCormick, he's not on the bench. I imagine if we are interested, we have to get rid of McCormick before we get someone else in.
Yeah, I mean,
it's interesting, isn't it? Sorry, Adam, I'll let you speak in a minute. If Woodyard's fit and you have Marsh as well. I mean, is a third? Do we get a third person in? Is that covering? I mean, who are we covering? Are we covering our new man? You know, and also, Mark, you've singularly failed to answer the question, which is where does Asal play in this formation?
Okay, sorry. My answer is attacking midfield. I would play Woodyard and Magoma behind him, but we have no idea whether Woodyard will be fit. Maybe even
Then you drop Chislett.
Yeah, but at the moment you don't deserve to drop. Chislett doesn't deserve to be dropped because he's the hardest working midfield player in the Western world.
So does Chislett replace Marsh, and then you put Asal behind?
I'm not sure if he's the hardest working player in the Western world. Just I think you might have exaggerated a bit then.
I was just trying to paraphrase Carter the Unstoppable Sex Machine, but you know, get as many literary references in as possible.
Adam, what do you think?
Now I tend to agree that I think we need a midfielder that can hold the ball up, do some things, and allow our new attackers to have some space because they're going to get battered otherwise. I have no idea who any of the other players are in the entire league. I'm lucky if I can remember the 11 that are running around for us, right? So I would have to defer to who that midfield person would be. But I'd like an experienced big guy who can hold the ball up but play the kind of football that we need to play now, which I think is slightly different. Hold the ball up and then play it out to, you know, the channels and whatever, rather than maybe coming in for the crosses. Because it's really, you know, we've got our strikers, other than the newer guy, they're all quite small. And you've got big defenders in this league. And so crossing, for a number of seasons, doesn't seem to do us any favours a lot of the time. When it does, it's fantastic. But I often think we're better off sort of unlocking some space and having those little guys running at the defenders and pulling off some shots, which they could do if the ball could be held up in midfield a bit more. That's why, again, I was thinking about the space, so just a bit more space in midfield. So I don't know which that player would be, from Ipswich or wherever, but Mark will probably know. Big guy who can hold the ball up, who's been around for a while.
Sounds like a Harry Pell about 8 years ago, but he's knocking around up north.
Harry Pell's
I'm interested because people are talking about, when you listen to the podcast and you read online, people are saying that we need two or three people. And everyone's saying a midfielder. And then people are talking about, would it be a right back?
Cover for Gunther.
Yeah.
For that. I mean, I think that's the centre mid, and I do have question marks over Nick. Because, he's a confidence goalkeeper. But
that's
the goalkeeper
a big change, though. Yeah, that's a big change, though, I would say. I mean, I think he is a confidence goalie, and we don't want him to lose his confidence, and I don't think that's going to happen quickly. But changing your goalie, that changes the whole dynamic of the back four for me, because the communication...
Do you look at Nick Czanek and think, this is a guy that dominates the area and gives confidence to your defenders?
No, but I don't look at anyone in the whole of League Two based on the highlights I've watched in the last 2 or 3 years of any team and feel that anyone would do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we've had goalies like that, and that's the sign of person you want. You want a person that dominates the area, that makes those shouts, that does that, that's kind of a loud... You know, that's... Look, Aaron Ramsdale was different mustard, but that was like Aaron Ramsdale's trait. And you could say with Kelly Roos, you know, these are people that were dominating the area, that were confident goalkeepers, and that gives confidence to your defenders. You know what they're going to do. Whereas, like, Czanek can make a brilliant save and then completely flap. Right? It doesn't really, you know...
It's interesting you mentioned Kelly, because Kelly Roos and George Long are both, I think, are both good goalkeepers for us. I think they were both great keepers. And they're not in their first teams. Am I right? I don't think they're playing... I don't think they're number one.
No, look, Long's on the bench at Mill, for example. I'm not sure where Roos is.
Because he was at Derby, wasn't he?
They released him. They had to release loads of players. And I think he might have gone somewhere like Aberdeen, but I might be back now.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, he was...
Well, also, I'm interested now. Are you, as a DTB member, allowed to say how rubbish our goalkeeper is?
Probably not.
I was wondering how far we get through the podcast without mentioning that.
I didn't say he was rubbish. I said he was a bit inconsistent.
Of course he is. But here's the thing, right? I wasn't at Crawley, but I understand at Crawley, we basically bored our way through the second half and spent loads of time just passing triangles amongst the back four, which, let's face it, a lower league goalkeeper, Czanek or anyone else, is not cut out to be that quality a player. In fact, you could probably name maybe half the Premier League goalkeepers, not League Two goalkeepers, who are good enough to play with the ball at their feet.
See, now, Tolmar, what you've gone and done is you've asked a silly question. If you asked me to name three Premier League goalkeepers, I'd struggle. The Premier League is a different place. It doesn't live in reality. It's in some hallucinogenic place that doesn't really mean anything to me. So it's like, you know, no.
Oh, I'm with you 100%.
Well, here's another question. Could you actually name, like, three players in each Premier League team? Yes, I couldn't.
I could, but that's because I do fancy league fairly rigorously. You know?
I see. Like, it just doesn't mean anything to me. It's completely like, you know, whenever I've been to Premier League games, it's just like watching cinema. It's just absolutely, completely pointless.
You know what? I've actually got no desire at all to go to a Premier League game.
It's a totally different game.
It is.
Like, you go to Plough Lane, and Plough Lane's special, right? Largely because my brother's put loads of artwork on the walls. And that's what makes it special.
Yeah, it's all Matt. That, No one else. Just Matt.
I have made it special, Mark. And there's nothing I can say about that. It's just the way it is.
That and the programme sellers. If it wasn't for the programme sellers and the artwork, then it would, and like, you know, somebody saying, oh my days, there would be, what would be the point? Football would be like, you know, whatever. But you know, playing special.
Apart
right?
from the programme sellers and the artwork and the Phoenix pub and the shop, what's Plough Lane ever done for us, eh?
And the fan zone.
And the fan zone.
Yeah.
And my pie.
is just... Oh, has anyone tried the new...
Ding Dong.
Ding Dong.
Yes. Nice. So I'm lucky.
The one's that?
There's a new Chinese place.
I tried it. Yeah. I had the vegetable spring rolls. Really good.
Yeah, so apparently the vegetable spring rolls are relatively well priced and they are delicious.
Yeah. It was
How did you get?
I got three. It's like three for like I don't know how much it was, but it was good.
Three or 4 quid. Yeah, it was really good.
The duck wrap thing, that was good. Recommend the duck wrap thing.
That duck wrap thing was too much sauce, and it went all over me. It was a mess.
Yeah, but Niall, every time I've seen you eat something, you create a mess. I thought I was bad, and then I was like, Niall's worse.
Have you ever seen me eat one of those pizzas from Dosha? So here's the question. How many...
I think we have the best food. Should we do a food festival at Plough Lane?
Great idea.
Absolutely, it happens every time. Every home match is a food festival. It's great.
Have any of you ever brought a non-Wimbledon fan to a game at Plough Lane?
Yes. Yeah.
And what was their impression?
Food's great. No,
they thought it was great. They're armchair Chelsea fans, so they'd not really been to many games, but they could sense the. Oh, and another friend of mine, Nottingham fan, who actually lives in Wimbledon, so I'm trying to convert him and his family slowly. And they loved it because of the atmosphere. That's the thing. That was the beer. It just felt different. It felt friendly. You know.
There's a few people I know recently that have gone there and just. I've gone to Plough Lane and they love the Phoenix because it feels like a proper pub. They love the food behind it. And when you walk in, and now I think, like Amelia, right, I hadn't been to a game for a while, and she went in and all those big pictures on either side of the wall when you walk in of all the old players on the West Stand, and you walk in and you see the One Ball, Two Eyes Eye, and you see all of that, and you get the sense that this is a unique club. And I think that's what draws people in. And then it's like, you don't have like you do at Arsenal and all the other grounds, just like one vendor selling a pile of rubbish food. You know, you actually get the sense that the club cares, and that's what we matter as fans. And I think that's the big difference between us and like so many other clubs.
I mean, I think the food offer is amazing. I love it. I love all the food thing. What's quite interesting, I noticed on socials, that people are talking about the price of food. They're saying that some people are saying that it's expensive compared to other clubs. I mean, I don't feel it personally.
I don't think it is. Not myself. Not when you talk about pizzas and stuff like that, and the kind of the different food that we get in that fan zone.
But that is interesting, though. I mean, I don't know if it is more expensive, and I don't really think about it, which I'm fortunate to not think about it too much. But maybe there is an option to get something that's like, you know, cheap and cheerful, just that you know anyone can grab, that maybe is a little bit under. I don't know what the prices are compared to elsewhere, but
I guess the reality is football, full stop, is a product. It's in its own way, it's not really a luxury thing. Other people who don't get football might think it's a luxury thing. Those of us, four of us here and many thousands, hundreds of thousands around the country,
all our listeners
obviously are so ingrained into football that it is their thing. And so some people use it as their social life, as their love life, as their, you know, ability to be able to sound off or whatever. And if they've had a bad week, then, you know, whoever passes the ball square in the first minute will get it in the ear. As I know now, as I move seats, and now I've got moaning old gits in the wheelchair area behind me. I'm sure lovely people, but they do like money.
Mark, I just need a little quick time out there, mate, because I just need to pick you up on something here. But I get it, social life, I'm with that. That's how, you know, that's how we've all met, you know, that's our conversations. So that's brilliant. You know, we chat about all different sorts of things. But love life, I mean, how's that working?
Who is Mark, Matt? Who is Mark married to?
Yeah, but I'm not married to someone I met at football.
Yeah, is it a romantic thing? I mean...
No. I mean, all I meant there was that, you know, that some people don't necessarily do anything of a weekend between mid-August and mid-April, apart from, you know, hang out with a bunch of different people. And they'll be of whatever creed, colour, age, sexuality, gender and everything. And they have a common interest, obviously, which is Wimbledon, following Wimbledon to random different places. And out of that, because you spend time with these people, comes God knows what, you know.
Yeah, I know someone recently go on, Noel.
I think the difference a bit now is that it's not necessarily all about the football. And that's the big bit. Because the last game of the season, the fan zone was packed for most of the second half.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, that makes sense because we were 3-0 down half time and playing shit. Oh, no, thanks for
that. It was funny though, because it was packed. And this is a wonderful thing about football fans, because we had to, what did we have to win by? We had to win like by
11 goals, 8-0.
Something ridiculous, like eight, there had to be an 8-goal swing or something like that. And so we're three nil down. I think, did we score quite early on to make it 3-1 or something like that? And it was still packed in the fan zone. And I was in the fan zone and it went 3-2 and the whole fan zone cleared. Everyone went back to the stands. And my immediate thought was, can we do this? And I think there was a whole load of fans who raced back in thinking, we could do it. It's insane.
The crazy thing about that is Bristol Rovers the same day had to win 7-0, didn't they?
Yeah. But it's the insanity of football and the insanity of football fans. I mean, and I'm sure it's not just confined to us, but I think all of us feel now, especially now, that if we're 2-0 up, it's like, oh God, no, please.
There was something we were chatting about on the last one, Fanta, yeah.
Loads of people going, can we just keep it at one? We'll win at 1-0, 2-0, all sorts of problems.
I actually went off the WhatsApp and went in the garden and did an hour's worth of gardening because I'm thinking I cannot bear to actually follow it when we are winning 2-0. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
And they've got a man sent off.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even look on Saturday because I just thought, let's just see what happens. And I was not going to spend another tenner on iFollow or whatever for the sake of it. That was not
wise move. Wise move indeed. So
anyway, look, we're going to run out of time. We've got like 3 minutes. We've got three minutes to wrap up.
Fabulous. Okay. Well, hopes for the season then, quickly. Whip round.
Playoffs?
Realistically?
Yeah.
Matt?
Oh, Matt. Genuinely, Mark, it depends if we play Crawley or Mansfield. If we play Crawley, automatic promotion. It was like, if we play Mansfield, then I'm worried about finishing the top half.
We're learning how to defend, you mean. Niall?
Do you know what? I can't do this because I am such
a football gods
person. I can't do predictions. Football gods are like, they're sacred. And it's just like, if you kind of say anything, it's like, I get worried. Well,
put it this way, I'll tell you what I planned. The season we ended up in the playoffs and then going to Wembley, I was so convinced we'd get absolutely nowhere. I planned to have an operation on my ankle. Had an operation on my ankle, came out of hospital 2 days before the first leg of the Fleetwood semi. First time I was out of hospital was actually going to the ground to watch the away leg. And then second time out was when that 5-0 game, when I was told not to move whatsoever. And every time we scored a goal, and we won 5-1, right? Every time I scored a goal, I jumped up and screwed my ankle a little bit more. Ended up going to the playoff final in a wheelchair space because I was so convinced we wouldn't get anywhere. So I'm anti-football gods on this one. I don't think we'll get to the playoffs. And therefore, I hope we will.
No, Tormod clearly going for automatic promotion.
No, I'm going for eighth when I think the top seven are the playoffs, isn't it? So,
it's slightly different.
Adam, what do you reckon?
No, playoffs, definitely. I really think we can do it. Yeah, yeah.
Top goal scorer, NYC.
Maybe.
I feel that we always need to end, we'll have to end these things usually with a prediction by Martin Drake. Because every time you get the predictions on all the other podcasts, the worst you get is a draw. No one ever really predicts a defeat. Even for all of last season, I don't think anyone ever predicted a defeat.
Even though we lost 20 in a row. Yeah.
So we need Martin Drake to give some reality checks to us.
All right. Here we go. What would Martin Drake say? We're playing Barrow at home.
Martin Drake would say we'll be 1-0 up with 15 minutes left and lose 2-1.
Yeah, he'd definitely say we'd lose. Right.
They are near the top, aren't they? I know we've only played 5 games, but they're like
third or fourth. Yeah.
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 Gentlemen, always a pleasure. See you all soon. See you on Saturday, if not before.
Yeah. See you Saturday, guys.
Play my wobbles.
Play my wobbles.
Might as well be true. Someone's got to hit the back of the net.